This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you, Rob. It's good to be here. As Rob said, it's been a couple of years of he and Mike asking me to put something together, and finally this year we got around to it. So I am truly enjoying kicking off this year's 2007 Pinball Expo. Rob mentioned I have been here for all 23 years. That's okay, Don.
You nodded at me.
Yep, I nodded at you. And actually, I dug out my old badges, 85, 86, 87. And it settles an argument that I've had with a number of people about where the first expos were held, whether it was 2 years or 3 years at the old Holiday Inn. It was 3 years, 85, 86, and 87. Were held at the Holiday Inn. So,
by the way, Tom, I was one to type those badges.
Hand type those? Is that right? Well, they're spelled right.
So it was IBM Split Matter.
but anyway, and I look out over this group and I think about a line from one of my favorite comedians, Groucho Marx, about I wouldn't join a club that would have me as a member. But this is like a family reunion coming back to Expo every year, and I see a lot of familiar faces. And speaking of Groucho Marx, I have been waiting for this for a long time. This slide here is probably the reason that I decided to speak, but it's more than uncanny. So anyway,
that'll teach you to pay people to give presents for people.
But what I'd like to do, just with that as a little bit of a background, is tell you somewhat of what my story is, because. The reason I'm into pinball and enjoy collecting pinballs is because I have an older brother who hated to babysit me. He's 10 years older than me, and anytime my parents went out, his idea of babysitting was taking me up to the local bowling alley in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and there was one on every corner. He'd give me a handful of dimes, he'd go bowl with his friends, and I'd go in the game room, and at 5, 6 years old, I remember sitting on that stool, my arms outstretched, playing pinball machines. And basically that hooked me. For the next 12 years, I went to every camp lodge, you know, ground, any family vacation, and I found the game room and basically begged people for money, hustled other kids at pool, whatever I needed to do to get dimes at that time, and played pinball. And it's amazing, I'm 49 years old now, and that was when I was in my teens, how many of those locations and games I still remember. I did a minor in pinball in college. It's amazing that I graduated at all. There was a bar right on campus called the Gas House, and one of the Milwaukee operators had every new game came out. And at that time, it was games like Blue Chip and Bank Shot and Ship Ahoy. It was in the mid-70s. And while it didn't help me get my first job, I guess I like to tease people and tell them that it did help me get a well-rounded education. Shortly after that, I got married and figured my pinball playing days were over forever. However, the place where we honeymooned actually had a game room between where we slept and where we ate. And my wife has volunteered at some point in the future to talk to other pinball widows and maybe put together a seminar on what it means to be a pinball widow. But anyway, I got her hooked on a brand new game called Firepower. She had never played pinball before. Actually, her parents... forbid it. They thought it was an instrument of Satan. Skill at pinball is the sign of a misspent youth. Was her motto, but I got her hooked, and she became a pinball convert, and the very first solid state game we bought, which we still have today in our living room, was a Firepower, because that's the game that got her hooked. In my case, the first game, we had been married about 3 months. We got married in September of 81, and in January of 82, I was looking through the paper, and I saw an ad for a Gottlieb Card Tricks for $150. And I said, well, wouldn't that be fun? Because we had this empty room at the house, and I went over, and we couldn't afford the $150. That was gas money, groceries, and haircuts. So I figured, well, what the heck? I can eat less, I can walk, and I just won't get a haircut for a while. I talked the guy down $10 to $140, loaded it up into the back of a 73 Buick Century, which if you tilted it upright, you could wedge it just right. Took it home, and it took about 3 weeks to get that game going. Had to learn how to read a schematic, which I still don't know, but I can at least follow the colors and the wires.
Speak to the mic better.
Oh, okay.
Pull my screen around.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. And my wife's very artistic, so she did all the play fields and And anyway, we still have that game as well, and there's some slides of that a little bit later. So I guess I've told a lot of people that collecting pinballs is kind of like potato chips. You can't just stop with one. And over the 25 years since we got that first game, I've owned close to 700 pinball machines. Currently today, the collection is just over 200, and I have about 150 of those set up and playable, and we'll have some pictures of that as well. I've also dabbled in jukeboxes, slot machines. We've got four kids, a dog and a cat, all that good stuff. And in 2002, after saving for 10 years to buy a vacation home in northern Wisconsin, I actually bought a warehouse in Milwaukee. As I said, I have a very understanding wife. She's still with me after 26 years. She'll be here tomorrow. You can all give her your condolences. And I began moving all the games in there. Prior to that, I had them stashed all over the city, in basements and storage units and containers, anywhere and everywhere that we possibly could have the games. And now what I hope to do over the next 10 years or so is restore them all. And I can't think of a better way to spend time than playing with the pinball games and having some fun. It's great when my kids are at school and all their friends are talking about their dads who are doctors or lawyers or collect Maseratis or Porsches. My daughter says, my daddy has 200 pinball machines. And they all look at her like she's from Mars or something. And nobody believes them. They think she's lying. So imagine my fun when I invite them over to the warehouse and we have a pinball night. So that's a little bit of my story. I guess now we'll go to the collection. As I mentioned, I have a particular fondness for the Gottlieb Wedgehead. My first game was a Card Tricks. I think my second game was a Mini Pool. And before I knew it, I had close to 60 games, and somebody told me that there were about 85 different models of wedge heads. And maybe 10 or 12 years ago, I set out to try to find all the wedge heads. And with an eBay purchase of an Atlantis a few years ago, I finally achieved that goal. And for all of you who will say, well, you can't have all the wedge heads if you don't have a TKO, well, I managed to come up with a TKO as well. So I now have at least one example from 1960 to 1978 of all the single-player Gottlieb Wedgeheads. Of course, after that, what was my quest? Well, they made two-player games. So now I'm trying to pick up some of the two-player games and the four-player games. And then Rob turned me on to the beauty of the Williams 60s games, and I realized, well, heck, there's 16 reverse wedgehead games. So I needed to go out and find those 16 reverse wedgehead games. So eventually, when the warehouse is all set up, the back row will be the 16 Williams reverse wedgehead games, and then we'll have all the Gottlieb games on the sides. Hopefully that will come sooner than later. Don, if you come to the warehouse, this is our mascot. A few years ago, this robot won the best of show for the ARP contest here at Pinball Expo. And Ron from, I think he's from Kentucky, who made it, and I have traded games in the past, and I asked him if he'd consider selling it, because it's truly a marquee piece. I needed something to define the building. And he threw out a number that just wasn't going to work, and so we did a little horse trading, and I traded him two non-working wood rail pinballs for the robot. And now we've been undergoing a contest for a while about what to name him. And so far, one of the leading candidates was Roboburg, but I don't know if that was going to stick. So if anybody else has any ideas, let me know. This is the front room of the warehouse. Don, you can hit the next slide. I've got what I call my big five. Those are my five favorite of the newer games. And those all came from Larry Kitchen. I'm not sure if Larry's in the seminar, but I know he was in the exhibit hall. And we picked those up a few years ago. But those are the ones that I enjoy. I also like some of the older games. And for those of you that like the 30s stuff, if you look down on the floor, you can see that I've got a collection of the little ones. Just ran out of space on where to store them. On the other side of that room, I've got a bunch of the two and four player Gottliebs. And one thing I want to point out that I'm very proud of that I picked up at the charity auction a couple of years ago, if you see that picture hanging on the wall over there, that's the actual space mission back glass that hung in Steve Kordak's office at Williams for many years. And Steve was kind enough to donate that to the Make-A-Wish auction a few years ago. And I purchased it and had him sign both the front and the back. So that's probably one of my all-time treasures. And a couple of the pinball books have a picture of Steve in his office, and you can actually see that glass hanging on the wall in the office. So that's a big wow for me. But once you leave the office and you go into the big part of the warehouse, this is what you'll see. That's about 3,000 square feet. And as of Wednesday of last week, I bought the unit next to me and picked up another 1,500 square feet. So we'll be separating the two halls. We'll have a single player hall, and then we'll have a multiplayer hall. But this is what I've been able to put together over the years. Mostly, as I said, the Gottlieb and the William single players. Another view, Don. That's on the back wall. You can see I've got some stuff hidden in the back. And Don, go ahead. And this is just one more from standing up on the top. I usually will have a Christmas party. The first year I had it, we had about 40 people show up. The second year, about 60. Last year, we had about 80 people show up. So I would ask if anyone's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin on December 8th, you're more than welcome to stop by. Just see me later, I'll give you my email. The other interesting thing is the Lionel Train Railroad Club of Wisconsin is in the unit next door to me, and they've got 3,000 square feet of Lionel trains, and they have the largest single span bridge, I guess, in North America that their members built over 1,000 hours. We coordinate our Christmas parties on the same day. So they talk about me as the pinball geek, and I talk about them as the train geeks, but we have Geek Fest. So if any of you guys are also into the Lionel trains, you can get two for the price of one if you come on up. A few years ago, I did an article for a magazine called COCA, Coin-Op Collectors of America, and they featured my collection, and I just got some of those pictures and a few of the milestone games that we can talk about. So go ahead. There basically is Gottlieb's Baffle Ball, the first commercially successful game. Over 50,000 units were sold. I picked that up a few years ago from a gentleman in Chicago. Don? The next one's kind of rare. Gottlieb distanced themselves that they never made gambling machines and pretty much hung it on Valley. But back in the early 30s, they made about a half a dozen payout machines. They then stopped making them. But this is called Sunshine Derby, and basically down at the bottom is a little push drawer, and that's where the payout would be. It was concealed, so you didn't actually see a payout trough, but you'd reach down and you would push in this little drawer, and it would open up, and that's where you would get your payout. And I found that in a basement at somebody's home in Milwaukee. So, and of course, what would a talk be if I didn't show the very first flipper game? I picked that up from a contact I made at Expo about 10 years ago. Go ahead. This is an interesting game. I don't know if any of you have ever seen this before. It's Exhibit Supply. It's called Major League Baseball. There's actually a rotating turret in the middle of that game, and there's small little marble-sized balls that would drop down and would signify whether it's a single, double, or triple. So kind of a rare piece, and I'm a big baseball fan, so I had to pick that up. And then, of course, we go into the metal rail era. This is the stuff that I really enjoy working on. The very first Attaball game. They made a few wood rail ones, and I've seen one once. I think that Steve Engel from Mayfair had one at an expo many, many years ago. The reason that they made the Attaball, for those of you that might not be familiar with this vintage game, is that a lot of municipalities and states in Wisconsin, New York, and Connecticut considered pinball gambling, because it was a game of chance. And so the pinball designers got together and added the element of skill. You wouldn't win a free game by chance, but you could extend the current game you were playing based on your skill by achieving point or feature information. So that's one of my favorites. Go ahead, Don. And then there's the whole Flipper series. In 1962, they came out with Flipper Clown, and also Flipper Cowboy, which is one of my all-time favorite games. And Flipper Fair, which with the animation is kind of fun. I ended up finding a colored ping pong ball that I have passed from one to the other. But from my point of view, these five Flipper games made in the 60s really kind of epitomize what Gottlieb was able to do. That's probably my favorite era. And then Majorettes, that's a fairly low production game, and that's a game they did not make a replay version of. I think the production run on Majorettes was under 500. It's actually a very challenging game to play because down at the bottom, there aren't any slingshots on either side of the flipper. And to be able to get the fives at the bottom, you really have to be able to bounce that back up. Slick Chick, When I used to come to Expo in the early years, everybody talked about Slick Chip, and that Slick Chip was the greatest pinball game ever made. Well, again, I'm from Wisconsin, Attaball territory. They didn't make an Attaball version of Slick Chip, so I think it was probably four or five Expos before I ever played the game. And again, similar to Majorettes, where you have to get the letters in a sequence, that's also a very challenging game. I've grown to love it, and I play that game a fair amount. Hurdy-Gurdy, again, the Attaball version of Central Park. I like all the games that had the back glass animation. I think the designers really had something going there when they did that for the attract mode so that they could get people to come in and play the games. Then here's one of the reverse wedge heads. This is probably one of my favorite games as well, Skill Pool. And the very first one I played was at an early expo. And Vagabond. What's interesting about Vagabond, that had the very first drop target on it, that little guy right in the center that you hit and he would fall on down. Then, of course, I mentioned that there were multiple versions made of the same game so that they could distribute both in the Attaball states and the replay states. Melody and Sing-Along are examples. Basically, the playfield action is the same. However, Melody was the Attaball, Sing-Along, the replay. Probably one of my top five favorite games, Dimension, the challenge of getting all those drop targets. If you like drop targets, games like Dimension and Gold Strike are great. If you don't like drop targets, you probably wouldn't like this game, but it's very challenging. Once you get everything lit up, you can just pop, 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 get those balls back up. Flipper Pool and Flipper and Bankaball, again, two games that the same game but a different back glass and features. And again, I mentioned I'm a baseball nut. This is one of my guilty pleasures. Most people that I talk to about Batter Up absolutely hate this game and consider it boring. But I like the very targets, and again, I like the baseball challenge, plus the light animation in the bat glass. I think this was the fourth or fifth pinball game I picked up early on in collecting. And then Airport. This is another guilty pleasure. I saw an Airport in the exhibit hall. If you guys get a chance to play that, it's actually a pretty fun game. I put the flippers on high tap so I could get the very targets back, but there's some neat features on that one. And then here, Atlantis. I had mentioned my quest to get all of the different wedge heads that were out there. I had every one but Atlantis. That was the last one I needed, and as much as I love eBay, I also hate eBay. In this case, I love eBay because I found this Atlantis, I won it, and then discovered that the lady was in Pennsylvania. I was so excited to see an Atlantis, I didn't look where the heck the game was. So I bought the game and then realized it was in Pennsylvania, and she was a widow selling the game, and she didn't want to deal with shipping, and I didn't know what the heck to do. Well, here's, I guess, a little heavenly intervention. Her next-door neighbor was driving to Oshkosh, Wisconsin for the EAA convention, and for $100 he dropped it off at my doorstep. So that's one of those meant-to-be type things. So that Atlantis, that capped the collection. And then this was the very first wood rail I picked up. You don't see too many of these, but the two-player Mademoiselle, a lot of fun. And of course, I had to tell my wife the reason I bought it is because the gal in the back glass reminded me of her. She let me buy it. Okay? And then just a random picture of Beat Time because I had it. Now, the other thing to talk about the shop, I like working on the games. But I don't have the time to work on the games. I got a couple of buddies that help me out, and I'll embarrass them later. But a lot of times people just like to see the workbench. Well, there's the workbench, and parts is parts. I've got another one around the corner. But basically, if I get an old game, I will take off just about anything that's usable, and that's kind of home sweet home. My good friend Dennis in the orange shirt back there spends hours and hours helping me fix games at that bench. And then here's just a couple more random shots of the warehouse. Go ahead. Those were taken, Tuesday. And now I have a special tribute to Card Tricks, because actually, I love the game. It's a fun game to play, and it's one of the few games Gottlieb made that had an asymmetrical playfield. Most of the playfields are symmetrical, and what you have on one side, you have on another, but not Card Tricks. And actually, like, I remember the birthdays of my kids. I remember the birthday of my Card Tricks game. It was January 11th. This is what it started out looking like. Quite a mess. Didn't know what I was doing, so I just took everything apart. Figured that'd be a good way to learn it. Okay. And this, again, just in process. I had little peanut cans, and I kept everything. And after 3 weeks, I finished the game. But there was one thing missing. And again, here's where it comes into having a very understanding wife, because if a guy loves pinball, what's better than pinball? Pinball and girls. So my wife and one of her girlfriends borrowed a couple of maid costumes from where they worked, and I hosted a card club, a poker night. And I had my buddies come over for poker, and my wife and her girlfriend were nice enough to serve us beer all night long. They were our beer girls. And there was quite a discussion at home the other day about whether or not I could include this slide, but she said, gee, I wish my legs still looked like that. And that's how I got her to include this slide. So that's my first game, card tricks. In 1989, that's what the basement looked like, and just to show you, I was young once. That's enough of that one.
Okay.
Then I've got to talk about pinball is a family sport. You know, the kids still refer to it as dad's hobby, but I really tried to involve the kids. My daughters and I actually go to the show in Kalamazoo every year, and they compete in the contest there. They've competed here, the art contest and everything. Well, this is my son, Charlie, and I had so many pinballs stuffed in the basement that I needed one more place to put it, and it ended up going in his room. And it wasn't long after that he figured out how to play it. He's about 18 months old there, so this is probably in 1989. And he liked pinball so much that I took him to the expo the next year, and there he is. He said he recognized that as a firepower. He says, Daddy, that's the game we have at home. So we took that picture in 1989, and there was a local reporter from the Rosemont Times, and they actually did a feature story, and that picture was in the newspaper. Now, right now I'm going to tell you that my son Charlie is 20 years old. He's proudly serving the United States Marine Corps. He is in Ramadi, Iraq right now. And I would like to go to the next slide, please. For all of you who are in the service and our veterans, please support our troops. This picture was taken in Iraq. That's his full flak jacket. They basically hid behind some rocks to take a break. This is his second tour of duty over there, and the media doesn't always report what is really happening. But regardless of your political views, I just ask that you all support the troops. And thank you for that round of applause. It made me all very clap. All right, well, now it's time to embarrass my friends. The very first expo I exhibited at was 1981. That's me and Greg. And I was a last-minute exhibitor, and the exhibit hall was full. So Mike, never wanting to turn down a dollar, stuck us out in the lobby. We were on the outside of the exhibit hall. We had a few games. And I guess if you look in the back corner, that's a Gottlieb Squarehead. I sold that to Tim Arnold for $200, and I think that's the one that he has in his pinball museum. Now we'll fast forward to my current posse. There's Greg again. And really, I like this picture because I'm the only one with dark hair. In the middle is my grandpa Ozzy, who's hiding in the back, promising to heckle me, and then Dennis, who helps me keep all those games running. But that was in 2003, the year that we got the robot.
Here's coming, Tom.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah, well, hopefully not too soon. So now this is a random picture of my old warehouse, just for those of you that remember those days. This was a basement of a 1920s delicatessen in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And for $75 a month, they let me rent down there. And it was fine till the first spring. And I realized they didn't have a sump pump. And there was about 2 inches of water and everything. So everything's up on blocks. But that's where it started out. And that was a flight of about 13 stairs. So everything was up and down. And one of the reasons I bought the warehouse is because my guys here said they weren't going to carry all those games up and down the stairs anymore. But that's just a random shot.
Still wet.
It is still wet because now when I moved up, Don and a couple of his friends took it over. So as long as you keep things up.
And just keep dry.
Here's just another random shot. So you can go to the next one, and we're going to hold there for a little while because now I have some fun. Hopefully, you guys think it's fun. But anyway, if I can find my good stuff here. We were going to play, it's called Guess the Game. And I've got a couple of items here, and just holler it out if you know the answer. Does anyone here know the first game that had a tilt mechanism? I'm looking at Mr. Cummings back there. Probably had one. It was a Williams Advance. That was the first game to have a tilt mechanism. Anybody know what the first multi-ball game was? What was the first solid-state multi-ball game?
Fireball.
All right, you guys do know. And I already gave you the answer on the first game with a drop target. That was Vagabond. How about the first wide-body machine?
Atarians.
Exactly, Atarians. That's good. First talking pinball?
Virgo.
That was an easy one. How about the first pinball to feature vertical and horizontal playfield?
Bonsai.
Very good. Now we'll have some fun. The first flipper game was?
All
right, that's the easy one. What was William's first flipper game?
Sunny.
Sunny, that's right. How about Bally's first flipper game?
Melody.
Oh, you guys are what? Ginkgo?
Triple action.
Triple action? How about Chicago Coin? Oh, you guys are great. And finally, Exhibit Supply. And I just bought one of these a month ago. Build Up. It was called Build Up. Well, that's pretty good. Just a couple other. What was the first pop bumper? Gottlieb? 1949 Buttons and Bows. What was the last wood rail made?
Flipper.
Well, okay, the last full production wood rail made. What was made right before Flipper? Cupid Doll. And let's see, just a couple more. What was the first game with steel legs?
Easy Aces.
Easy Aces. First game that had real scoring?
Army.
Army Navy is great. Hey, there's Mark. He finally made it. How about the last game, the last Gottlieb game that had bulb scoring? Also had light animation.
Spaceship.
Dancing Dolls. Spaceship was actually the last Williams game with Bob Scoring. So anyway, just some fun there. Well, what happened, Don?
I don't know.
Okay, now we'll do some pictures to see. Hit the next slide. Can anyone tell me what game that's from? That's probably a tough game because the company only made one pinball machine. Go to the next one. Black Sheep Squadron by Astro Games. I've never seen one of those before, and I bought that out of a basement for $100. And I went to Allentown this last year, and there were two of them at Allentown. You never know. All right, Don? This is another one. Anybody know what game
Lawman.
That's from? What?
Lawman.
Sharpshooter.
No.
Roundup.
No.
Sheriff.
Lariat? Somebody say Lariat? That's it. Go ahead. Yeah, that's a fairly rare game. That's the Attaball version of Wild Wild West. Okay. This one's for Ozzy. What game's that from? Okay. Anybody know?
Oops, I blew it.
That's okay. And now this, I had to steal this picture off the internet because I'm technically challenged, and a bunch of the pictures I took had the little handle from the camera hanging in front of it. My daughter was helping me with the PowerPoint, and she just shook her head, and so we went and stole that one off the internet. Got another one? That one's easy. I had to put that one in. Okay, Don. All right, go to the next one, and try to get
Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Excellent, good, all right. And that one also, I took a bad picture, so I stole that off the internet. Don, now we're gonna play something called the match game, and here's probably where I'm gonna get in some trouble, but we're gonna have some fun anyway. This is like a word association game. So I'm gonna give you a couple of clues, and then basically we're gonna see what you come up with. So the first subject is games. Okay, so what kind of games are there? Well, there's electromechanical games. Okay, and there would be? Go ahead. And what's the future of pinball? Well, here's what I hope it is someday. Robots. Can you see the virtual reality pinball? So this is kind of the theme I just wanted to set with this one on what we're going to do. So now the next subject is bumpers. Okay? So first we have jet bumpers. What else would we have?
Pop
bumpers. And what else?
Thumb bumper.
Well, I don't know. Go ahead, Don. What is it?
Yeah.
See, I just had to lull you into that false sense of security with the first couple. So now let's have some fun. What's next? Okay. So what kind of flippers? Short flippers. Can anyone tell me what game that's from, by the way? No. It's a fairly rare Gottlieb four-player called Polo. But anyway, go ahead. Next. And long flippers? All right. Well, what's left? We have short flippers, long flippers? Banana flippers, I think. Can we see banana flippers? There we go. Banana flippers. So I always have to work a little politics into the show, but that's okay because there's more coming later. So what's the next topic, Don? Heads. All right. Well, so we have wedge heads, and we have
reverse
wedge heads. And now here's, for those of you that didn't like the Clinton slide, next, we have fat heads. But that's just, again, I'll try to keep the politics out of this because really, the candidate I'm backing this year stands for family values. He takes care of his kids, and things always turn out right. Here is our next president. Because he probably could do a good job. Anyway, so what's next, Don? We have cabinets. Now, this is the one where I may never get invited back to Pinball Expo, but I couldn't resist this. So we have wood rails, and what would be next? Metal rails, and finally? So, is Mike in the room, or am I safe?
Never.
All right, I'm safe. So this is our secret, guys. I don't want anybody here to tell him. And now my daughter, who helped me put this PowerPoint together, put this next slide in. She says anybody that's on blogs knows what that means. So that was in response to the picture of Mike. Well, that's okay, because now here's my shameless plug. I'm sure you've seen it advertised in the various magazines, but Alex has put out another pinball calendar. And this year he came to me, and I was able to help him with some flyer copies. And the month of December is actually my hula hula game. So if you can pick up a calendar, he puts a lot of work in it. And I know Jim Shelberg from Pin Game Journal is also responsible for getting it out the door. But it's a nice way to support the hobby, and it's a good discussion point when you have people over. So anyway, in closing, my favorite quote comes from Harry Williams, and that's, "The ball is wild. That's why pinball will always be the best entertainment. Video games can be fun, but it's never the same if the ball is not wild." So I'd be more than happy to field any questions, comments, answers, whatever. David.
All right, so getting back to reminiscing,
mm-hmm.
Can you recall when you first realized that your state of Wisconsin was an add-a-ball state and that most of the country had these different machines? And did you immediately try to travel to another state?
Actually, it was the second Pinball Expo when somebody had a flip-a-card. And I looked at the play field and I said, well, that's a card trick. And then I looked at the flip-a-card and, Pat Hamlin and his... I think it was his brother, came to those first couple of expos, and those were the folks that explained to me the difference between replay and add-a-ball states. And really, it wasn't until probably 5 or 6 years later that I took the time to learn which games had both versions, and then, you know, started picking up what I could. Anybody else?
Tom, what's your favorite Williams game?
My favorite... My favorite Williams game probably was Skill Pool. I enjoy playing Skill Pool. Friendship 7 is a lot of fun.
Is that an add-a-ball game?
Yeah. Yep. So, anything else? Yep.
What was the hardest game for you to find?
Probably the Atlantis, which was the last game, because I had gone to a lot of shows looking for a lot of different games and never found that. The TKO was a problem, but... Mike Hanley from Canada had picked one up, and I was able to work out a deal, and that's where mine came from. He had gotten it from South America. I think probably the best deal I ever had, a lot of you old-timers would remember Dick Bouchel. Dick used to come to Expo, one of the true heroes of our hobby and all coin-op. And I had helped him because I also collect bagatelles. I've got quite a large collection of bagatelles, and Dick and I were working on a bagatelle project. And basically, I had a flyer for one of the old bagatelles that he didn't have. And for trading him that flyer, he gave me the name of somebody that was about 6 blocks from here. That basically, we went over to their house, and for free, they let us pull a Williams soccer out of the basement. So I traded a flyer for a pinball game. I had a $25 hurdy-gurdy once. That was pretty good. Some of the quests, I think the thrill of the chase is really one of the things I like a lot about the hobby. You get a lead and you chase it down. I drove halfway across Wisconsin to buy a Captain Fantastic once, only to find out it was the home version. one of the bigger disappointments. And I found some pretty interesting stuff inside of pinball games. I found Polaroid pictures of the guy's girlfriend. Those were pretty awful. Pardon? Yeah, that I don't. I remember buying a couple games on the south side of Milwaukee, and I think it was. I think it was a Friendship 7 and a Wingding, and I'm loading the games into the car, And all of a sudden, the guy's son comes home. And he has this terrified look on his face. Like, Dad, what are you doing? I'm selling these damn pinball machines. We're getting rid of these pinball machines. And the kid stood there just almost in tears. I thought, wow, he was really attached to him. Well, when I got him back home and I opened it up, he was storing his pot in the coin box. So not only did Dad sell the kid's games, he sold the kid's stash. So, of course, I flushed it right down the toilet.
On some of the new games, like some of the Stern games that have just come out, what do you think will be collectibles in later years, and what would be the basis for that collectability?
Well, I think the licensing concept has a lot to do with it. I think games that are tied to something that has other collectibles, like Spider-Man, you can collect Spider-Man stuff going back to the comic books in the 40s and 50s and costumes in the 60s and 70s. So I think the most collectible of the newer games will be the crossover, if there's another collectible associated with that. Gameplay is obviously important, but if somebody just wants one game for their basement, they're probably going to pick something that they can identify with other than it being a pinball.
Kiss
is the perfect example. Yeah.
How much, over the last 25 years, how much time can you or your family spend in location play during each period? You mentioned at the beginning when you were a kid, you played a lot on location. How has that changed over the years?
Well, I believe that the hobby only survives if you patronize the operators. So any chance that I can play a game on location, I will. But I'm also one of those guys where if the game's not maintained, I'll write the operator's number down and I'll call him. And probably 7 out of 10 times, the guy tells me to go pound sand. But that's his prerogative. His game will earn more money if it plays well. But I truly enjoy finding games on location. And there was a bar in Madison, Wisconsin, that up until a few years ago was still operating electromechanical. And that was called the Plaza, where they always had the lights on. At bar time, they turned the lights out. It's opposite everything else. But yeah, I will. There's a couple of internet sites that will tell you games on location. There's actually a guy in Wisconsin that maintains a list of just about every tavern in Wisconsin and what games are there. So I'll make an effort to go out and play the games. Sam.
Yeah, you're the Williams guy when it comes to collecting games in the collecting field. And a lot of the Williams games that I've gotten are always missing the scorecards. How lucky have you been about finding sets of scorecards in most of your Williams games?
Well, that's because all the Williams games that I've sold you, Sam, I've taken the scorecards off. Where possible, I'll always leave at least one set of scorecards in. But if I get the complete set of paperwork with a game, I will probably keep the scorecards just on file.
Yeah.
But
I
probably have bet maybe 500 on the Williams games. Maybe half the time they'll have the scorecards. Much higher with the Gottlieb games. I'm hoping that at some point somebody undertakes a project on the internet, and I would be happy to contribute 200 scorecards that I have to scan scorecards and maintain some sort of a shared database out there where collectors can go and get the information. Steve Young probably doesn't want to hear me say that. But
that's why it's not happening in the United States. It's a guy in the Netherlands that's doing it.
Oh, is somebody doing it?
Beyond the reach of the American authorities.
Okay, well, good.
The trouble is, too, is when people store games away, they'll put the scorecards with the games, and then you can't help stop the scorecards running because they're stuck over there.
Right. Yeah. Well, let me know what you need, Sam. Maybe I can help you.
Sure.
Do you collect any games made by United?
I have a couple of bowlers by United, but right now I don't have any pins. I've had some in the past. I had a real nice Mexico, which is a pretty wood rail. But we'll see. Maybe there will be one in the exhibit hall. All right, well, thank you very much. Brian? Go ahead.
I just wondered what was the most amount of games you ever picked up at one time?
I bought an operator out in Wausau, Wisconsin, in northern Wisconsin. 64 games in one.
Wow.
That was over two summers. 29 games the first summer, and then picked up the rest the second summer.
Tell them about the bridge.
Pardon?
Tell them about the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Greg. You know, after picking up 29 games in a rented Ryder truck and unloading half of the games, it's about a 12-hour day to drive up to Wausau, load the games, and drive back. And I unloaded half the games at my house, and we were going to my friend's house to unload the other half of the games. And I was tired, we're smoking cigars, it's the end of a long day, and I said, here, take a shortcut, go this way. Well, we took a 12'6" Ryder truck under a 12-foot high bridge. It was the loudest smack I ever heard. We called the 800 number, and the guy said, what bridge? And I said, Swan Boulevard in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. You got under that one? Oh, most people get wedged halfway through. You must have still had a load in your truck. So anyway, we pull over, and I open up the back door of the truck and look up and see nothing but sky. And I turn around and look behind me, and there, neatly in the middle of the road, like a tuna can, rolled up was the roof of that truck. And the moral of that story is always take the insurance, because that was about $2,800 worth of damage that cost me $15. And I think in about another year and a half, I'll be able to rent Ryder trucks again. Anyway, well, thanks again. Enjoy the show. Thanks, thank you guys for coming.